Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Chof Amud Bet by the Mishnah. Ein maskirim lehem batim be'eretz Yisrael, ve'ein tzarech lomar sadot. When it comes to Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to rent to the Akum, the non-Jew, houses, and you don't even have to tell me about fields, which means that fields are much more problematic, which the Gemara will discuss. Ubisuria, when it comes to the areas that are known as Arom Tova, Arom Damesek, it's not exactly modern-day Syria, but up towards that northeast area, areas that David HaMelech captured and that were under Jewish jurisdiction for different periods of time, in the time of David and Shlomo, and even later on in the time of the Chashmonaim, when the full Chashmonai empire expands, it actually includes areas over there as well. So over there, Maskirim Lehem Batim, you're allowed to rent to them houses, Avalos Adot, but not fields. What's clear here is that you can't sell either of them in that location. When it comes to places that are further away from Eretz Yisrael, you can sell them houses, and you can rent them fields. Rabbi Meir. That's the position of Rabbi Meir. So just in terms of Rabbi Meir's Shita, there's a hierarchy clearly where Sadot are much more problematic than Batim. And then within that, you have to look, in Eretz Yisrael we don't allow anything at all. In Surya, seemingly from the Mishnah, obviously the Gemara is going to change this seemingly, is that because it's adjacent to Eretz Yisrael, therefore we don't allow any selling, because that's what happens in Eretz Yisrael. And then we differentiate between Batim and Sadot, Sadot which are more problematic, there we also restrict it. Whereas by batim, which are less problematic, we don't restrict it. B'chutzaretz mochim lehem batim. By chutzaretz, we allow you to sell batim because those are less problematic. And we allow you to rent to them fields, but we don't like to sell them fields up to Eretz Yisrael. So that's the view of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Eretz Yisrael maskirim lehem batim. You're allowed to rent them houses in Eretz Yisrael of a los adult, but not fields. B'suria mochim batim umaskirim sadot. And again, in Syria, they shifted down one level. Therefore, you could sell them houses, but you can only rent them fields. In Chutz La'aretz, you're allowed to sell whatever it is that you would want. There are no restrictions. Now, the Mishnah continues, Af b'makom shamru la'askir. Even in places where they allow you to rent, so seemingly this isn't within the position of Rabbi Meir, because according to Rabbi Yossi, there's no problem at all. You can be maskir them batim everywhere. So here, ap makom shamru laskir means even in places where they allowed it, which means that there are places where it's not allowed. For Rabbi Yossi, there are no places where it's not allowed to rent to them. Lo lebeit dira amru, you're not allowed to rent it out as a residence. Mipnei shu machnis l'tocho avodat kochavim, because he brings in avodah zarah into the house. Shneamar lo tavi toiva el beitecha. You're not allowed to have a toiva, avodah zarah, brought into your house. And again, here it seems like that is a problem. If you are renting it to them, it's still your house. And if it's your house and they're bringing in the Avodah Zarah, that becomes your problem, or it's a violation of this Isur Midoraita. But you can rent them, and this is more explicit in the Tosefta, areas that are for storage, areas that are not for residence. In no location are you permitted to rent to him a bathhouse, because it remains under the name of the Jew. And that means even once he's rented it out, it's still Shlomi's bathhouse. And if it's Shlomi's bathhouse and someone's doing work on Shabbat in the bathhouse, or is doing work in times that are otherwise asur, people are not going to assume that he rented it out to someone. They're going to assume that these individuals are working on his behalf, and that will be problematic. So it's mipnash, achshad. It's not a problem of actually renting it out to them. The problem is that there's going to be a chashad because the merchatz never leaves the possession of that individual. My answer if Lamar Sadot, so this is your question. Why is it clear in the Mishnah that Sadot are much more problematic than Batim? Both in Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi's hierarchy, Sadot are always more stringent than those of Batim. So Gemara asks the first question, why is it answer if Lamar Sadot? Why is that so obvious? If you say because there are two problems with Sadot, Chada Chaniyat Karko, one of them is what we saw in yesterday's daf, lotichaneim, lotitem lem chanaya bakarka, you're not allowed to give them a hold in the land, and therefore that is problematic in terms of giving them ownership or any hold on the land. Chadad amafkale mi maser, because you are taking it away from the obligation to have maser and truma taken from this field, because it's no longer under the jurisdiction of a Jew. So that would be two problems. The one is the absolute restriction to give them any hold in the land. The second one is that you're actually mafkia from the kedushat haaretz, which requires certain things to be done with the land. Iochi batim nami mikatarte. By houses, you can say the same thing, that there are actually two issues. Chada chaneat karko. You have the same problem of lote chanein, which is not giving them a hold in the land. Chada deka mafkia la mimizuzah. You also stop the house now from having a requirement of mezuzah put on it. When it was owned by a Jew, there was a mezuzah in the house. Now that it's owned by a non-Jew, the mitzvah mezuzah disappears. So Amram Bisharshia, mezuzah chovat hadarhu. Mezuzah is the obligation of the party that is living there. It is not an obligation on the house per se. It's an obligation on biatcha, which is the Gemara's Darasha of Uktavtama mezuzot beitecha, uvisharecha, beitcha. The Gemara Darshan says biatcha. The one who goes in and out of the house is obligated in the mezuzah. That has two implications. One of which is what we're saying here, which is it's chovat adar. That means that if a non-Jew is in the house, there's no obligation of mezuzah. The second one is that whoever is the renter in the house is obligated in mezuzah, not the landlord. So even if you have two Jews involved, the renter will be the obligated party because he's the biatcha. He's the one that goes in and out of the house. He has the obligation with the mezuzah. All right, so here are two issues to deal with, one of which is an extension of what we spoke about yesterday and really has major implications in terms of heter mechira today. So the question yesterday we dealt was with lo techanein, which is, are you allowed to allow a non-Jew ownership in the land? And that's whether it's through haskara, whether it's through renting, or whether it's through selling, do you have this ability to give them any hold in the land? Isn't there an isur of giving them rights, ownership rights in the land? So there you have to deal with who that restriction is on, which is a major issue for lo techanein, if it applies, as we said yesterday, whether it only applies to the Shiva Amamim or is it applied to other Akum as well. And even if it applies to Akum, is that only Ovdei Avodah Zarah? Maybe it doesn't apply to those that are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So that's one issue that you have to deal with. Second issue you have to deal with is, even if you allow them to rent the land, and you can come to a situation in which it is permissible, for instance, maybe if it's over a short duration, or it's for the benefit of the Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael, it's a benefit to the Jews that are there. So maybe you can come around to a heter. You have a second question which you have to answer, which is, even if a non-Jew owes the land, does that mean it's potur from the mitzvah that's liyot baretz? That goes to a second question, which is, there's a machloket as to whether a goy is mafkia midei, Kedushat Haaretz, or he gets enough of a kinyan that he changes the status of the land to having no responsibility or no obligation with regards to Trumot, Masorot, Shemitah, all of those items. That all is dependent on the fact that if you do sell it to the goy, that you're successful then at selling it to the point where there is no longer an obligation. So that question comes apparent here as well, which is the Rishonim point out this seems only to be true according to the one who says that you can be Mafkia Mitei Maser. Because here, the problem with selling the sadeh or renting the sadeh is not only you give them chanaya batarka, but you're also taking away the obligation of trumot and masrot. So you would at first glance assume that means that it's only according to the one who says it's mafkia the land from this kedusha when you sell it to the goy. Tosafot over here proposes, he says, v'yesh mefarshim, da'ati afil l'man damar in kinyan lovit kochavim be'eretz Yisrael. This goes even according to the one who says you're not mafkia, because over here will be considered afka'ah, mashi ata biyadoved kochavim. The point is, at this time period, when it is in the hands of the goy, it will have this restriction on it, or not restriction, but it will have this problem associated with it, which is, there will be no chumot masrot taken off. Because when he plants it, he's not taking masrot over it. Therefore, this land will not have the mitzvah that's associated with that accomplishment. The goy has no obligation to take up trumot masrot. It's not his problem. The land still might have that obligation. That means if a Jew buys the produce from this goy, he will still have to take off trumot masrot from this produce. But nevertheless, in the interim period, when the goy has it, you are now suspending trumot masrot from this field. So that would suggest that even according to the one who says that it's not mafkia, still in this case, you're going to cause a, we'll call it a diminishment, or a temporary suspension in the trumot masrot being taken off the field. But by a house, there is no hafka'ah, which obviously has nafkaminot as to whether we think this Gemara is following that position of goy's ownership is mafkia midei trumot masrot, because that has implications then with regards to Heter Mechira. So even if you can get over the problems of Lo Techanein, you still might have a secondary problem, which is, are you able to now be Mafkia, I mean, Kedushat Haaretz by selling it to a goy? And Tosafot say, V'lo Nehira. I don't think that is right, because he says two things. First of all, B'schirut Gufa Ikatarte. That means that when you rent out a field to someone, you have the same problems as Mechira now. The Gemara is going to go on to say that the problem of Schirut is Atu Mechira. We don't want you renting it because you might come to Mechira. Renting seemingly only has one of the two problems. It has the problem of Chanaya Bakarka, does not have the problem of Mafkia Midei Trumot Masrot. According to this explanation, it should be the same thing. When you rent it to the Goy and you sell it to the Goy, you still end up in the same position, which is no Trumot Masrot, to being taken off this field. So why is it Gzeira Atu? It should be the exact same thing as Mechira. For that reason, he says that he doesn't think it's right. And the second reason he says he doesn't think it's right is because Gemara says here Mafkia. The word Mafkia means Mafkia Legamre. Makes it sound like it's totally removed or absent an obligation of Trumot Masro, not a suspension. So he believes that that explanation is incorrect, and therefore the way to explain it is Kaman Damar Yesh Kinyan. According to one who says there is a Kinyan for a Goy in Eretz Yisrael, to Mafkia Mi Masro, and therefore once you sold it to the Goy, you've now removed the obligation of this Chiyuv of Maaser from the house. Then we have a second piece in Tosafot, which is a big Kiddush in the Balei Tosafot, which the Gemara tells us in other places that a Jew who rents a house, if he rents a house in Chutz Laretz, then he only has to put up a mezuzah after being there for 30 days, because it looks like it's his. In Eretz Yisrael, if he rents the house, he has to put up a mezuzah immediately. Balei Tosafot now come around and say something that's a, sort of a chiddush, but has huge implications, l'halacha. Which is that the Balei Tosafot say, how am I going to explain now this issue of, here, you're mafkia midei trumot masrot when you're dealing with a sadeh, and by mezuzah, you're not mafkia midei mezuzah. So the question is, if you do give it to a goy, sell it to a goy, the mitzvah mezuzah does disappear. Okay, it's chovat adar, but this house will no longer have a mitzvah of mezuzah on it. What the Balei Tosafot in the end suggests is that when it comes to the rental of a house, you are not obligated min haTorah to put up a mezuzah on the house. That the only obligation that it comes to mezuzah are twofold. It has to be that it's beitcha, your house, and it has to be biatcha, that you're living in that house. That means there are two requirements for the chiyuv of mezuzah. You own it, and you live in it. If you're missing either of those two, it's no longer chayav in mezuzah. That means that if you're missing one, midoraita, it's no longer chayav in mezuzah, mida Torah. For instance, you do not live in the house currently. If you don't live in the house currently, then you don't need a mezuzah in the door because you only have ownership, you don't have dar. You don't have someone who's living in the house. On the other hand, if you're a renter in a house, you are, yes, biatcha, you're the dar there, but you don't have the ownership over the house, and therefore you're not chayav in mezuzah. And Tosafot's proof is, why in Chutz Laaretz do you have to wait 30 days before you put up a mezuzah? It's because it's near at Peshelo. It looks like it's his. What's the implication of that? The only reason you're putting up mezuzah is because it looks like yours, but it isn't yours. And you're only obligated because it looks like yours, which means it's a din derabonon, not a din d'oraita. And that's what the Balei Tosafot suggests over here, that it's only a chiyuv derabanan, midahava, a talit she'ula. He connects it to the same thing with regards to a talit that is borrowed. The chol amed yom tura min etzitzit. When you borrow a talit from someone else, your potter mitzitzit for the first 30 days. V'adin olam min haTorah. He says the same thing applies to a talit forever. You never have to put on tzitzit. Why in the end do you have to put it on after 30 days? Because it's nirat kishalo. It looks like it's your talit. When you borrow it for longer duration, people don't think you're borrowing it or renting it anymore. They think you're actually using it. It's yours. And at that point, you have to put on tzitzit. And that's what the Balei Tosafot say over here, that the din of tzitzit, the din of mezuzah, min haTorah, requires ownership. And without that, you do not have a chiyuv midoraita, only a chiyuv midrabanan. And that is because it looks like your property. And since you are the dar, that's what makes you the obligated party here. And that's what it means, chovat adar. Chovat adar means the obligations on the party that lives there, midrabanan. So midoraita, you need both. You need dar, and you need ownership. when it comes to deciding who midrabanan is chayve mezuzah, the socher or the maskir, we say it's chovat adar. It makes more sense to connect it to the person who is living there, because it says bi'atcha, the one who's going in and out of the house. The purpose of the mezuzah is for the one entering and exiting the house. And so therefore we place that obligation, midrabanan, on those parties that are living in the house. So that's an important hiluk that Tosafot makes and has implications we're going to see later on with regards to other dinim that the Balei Tosafot speak about. As now the Gemara says, B'Suria maskirim batim. In Suria, you're allowed to rent out houses to them, not sadot. Maishna mechira dolo. Why is it that we're not allowed to sell it to them? Mishum mechira, the Eretz Yisrael. Because it's close, proximate to Eretz Yisrael. Just like in Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to mechira. Alto Eretz Yisrael, we're going to say no mechira in Suria. Yachi miskirut nami nigzor. Why don't we do the same thing with renting out these items in Suria? Because there, in Eretz Yisrael, it's restrictive. Also in Chutz La'aretz, but here, Suria, which is proximate, adjacent to Eretz Yisrael, we should also be goes there, out to Eretz Yisrael. It says, he gufa gzera, banan nikum benigzor gzera the gzera. That itself is a gzera, meaning the restriction against renting is only a gzera, auto selling. And then on top of that, you're going to say now, put a gzera in Suria to add on top of that and say gzera le gzera. You're piling up gzerot over here. Suria itself is only a gzera because of Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, schirut is only a gzera atu mechira. So now, if that's the case, then that's why we would separate between schirut and mechira in Suria. Wait a minute. Ba schirut sadeh de bisuria de gzera le gzerahi bekagazrina. And we still put in place a gzera. When it comes to Suria, you have the same problem with regards to a field. When you have a field in Eretz Yisrael, mechira is a surah min haTorah of lo tichanein. Schirut is a surah because of gzera atu mechira. Now I go to Suria. Rabbi Meir in Suria said both selling and renting fields is restricted. Why would that be the case? Mechira, I understand, it's gzera to Eretz Yisrael. Sirut would again be a gzera le gzera. And Eretz Yisrael's a gzera, then why would make such a gzera piled on top in Suria? The Gemara answer is, hotam lav gzerahu. That is not a gzera. Kasavar kibush yachid shmei kibush. You misunderstood in the Mishnah. Rashi in the Mishnah gives you the havamino of the Gemara, which is that Rabbi Meir believes that Suria has no kedusha associated with it. And then the Gemara now is jumping tracks and saying that Rabbi Meir believes there is kedusha ta'aretz when it comes to Suria. Not only is there Tishel kedusha, but even Suria has certain levels of kedusha. So now we're back. Once you say there is kedusha within the fields of Suria, then at this point you have the same questions of Eretz Yisrael. Sadeh, which has two problems associated with it. One is lotichaneim, and the second one is mafkia midei masrot, gazru bei rabbonon. Then the rabbonon were gozer. Batim, leikalutarte, houses that don't have both of these items, lo gazru bei rabbonon. The rabbonon were not gozer in that case. So you're now looking at the same thing as Eretz Yisrael, which is sadot are more chamur than batim. And in addition to that, you're dealing with that land that has the same status as Eretz Yisrael that has kedusha. What's clear here, it's obvious from the Gemara, which is even if you say there is kedusha to Arom Tova and Arom Damesek, that it has status like Eretz Yisrael, it's still only like Eretz Yisrael and doesn't have the full status of kedusha to Eretz Yisrael. As you see here, the Gemara, despite the fact that Rabbi Meir believes that there is kedusha to Eretz, to Aram Damesek and Aram Tzova, he nevertheless still differentiates between Batim and Sadot. And Rashi notes that over here, that even though there's an Iser now, what seemingly is De Oraita, they didn't go as far as to restrict renting houses in Suria because you might come to sell them. Even though in Eretz Yisrael we do that, in Suria we don't. That shows you that Suria is a lower level of Kiddusha. Now, the machloket about kibush yachid. When it comes to areas of Eretz Yisrael that are conquered by the Rabbim, they have a status of Eretz Yisrael and Kedushat Aretz. If they're conquered by an individual, Rashi says here the failing, he says this on the Mishnah, is chibra the Kedushat Eretz Yisrael, shaloa piya dibur, wasn't commanded by God, below shishim ribo, and it does not have 600,000 of Bnei Yisrael that are conquering the area, which would be a kibush Rabbim, and therefore it's known as a kibush yachid. That is the view of Rashi, The Balei Tosafot quote Rashi in a slightly different way, which is that it's missing a Shishim Ribo. Plus, it is also missing Urim Vitumim. It's missing the fact that the Urim Vitumim, which I would say that is equated with Al Pi HaDibur. The Urim Vitumim is the way to communicate with Hashem to know whether it is Hashem's will that this be done. What Rashi clearly says is there's a problem in formality when it comes to the kibush of Aron Tzova and Aron Damesek, which was that it didn't have the protocols that are required to give it Kedushat Aretz. Fundamentally, it could have been. Kibush Yechid works. It just has to be done in a manner which allows for the protocols to be kept. And that means that you need permission from Hashem, Urim Vitumim, Shishim Ribo, Klal Yisrael. You need all these protocols. If you have those, it'll work. If you don't have those, it won't work. Balei Tosafot are reluctant to accept the sheet of Rashi, and that is because they say there are many parts of Eretz Yisrael that were conquered by individual tribes, and not by Shishim Ribo of Klal Yisrael. So even within the borders of Eretz Yisrael, you have that problem. Forget about Syria. Even within Eretz Yisrael, you have the same issue. So they suggest here and many other places that the problem with Kibush Yachid is that there was a requirement that you capture the entirety or conquer the entirety of Eretz Yisrael before you extend the borders of Eretz Yisrael. And so they basically say that the area that is known as Eretz Yisrael and has Kedushat Aretz, there no matter how you conquer it, it will gain Kedushat Aretz. Because Hashem promised that land to us. He told us to conquer the land. You conquer that land. You live on that land. It will have Kedushat Haaretz. So there's no requirement or no differentiation between Kibush Yachid, Kibush Rabin. However it's conquered, however it's taken possession of by the Jews, that will have Kedushat Haaretz. Extending beyond the borders of Eretz Yisrael, there you can create Kedushat Haaretz or extend the Kedushat Haaretz, but there is one corollary. That corollary is that the person who conquers it can only do so after the entirety of Eretz Yisrael is conquered. And that is the criticism of David HaMelech, which is that he went out to conquer Aron Tzova and Aron Damesek while the Yebusi are still living in Yerushalayim. And so that's what the Midrash brings about David HaMelech. You're going out there conquering and extending your empire and extending your rule. Meantime, in your own backyard, the Yebusi are living in Yerushalayim. And that's the failure of Kibush Yachid, which is that he didn't have all of Eretz Yisrael cleared out before he started to conquer these areas. So that's according to the Balei Tosafot, the failure in that area. There are others who want to take a little slightly different tack to that, which is even when David HaMelech went to conquer those areas, he didn't conquer them for the purpose of appending them to Eretz Yisrael and giving them Kedushat Haaretz. He conquered them for the purpose of subjugating them and collecting a tax from them or a tribute that would come from these areas. And it was a way for him to raise funds and extend his land ownership in terms of his empire, but not a way to extend Kedushat Haaretz. And therefore, it would be a failure in David HaMelech's intent then, rather than simply a protocol problem according to Rashi, according to the Balei Tosafot, a corollary that you can only extend Kedushat Haaretz if you have already conquered all the areas in Eretz Yisrael. But that's the failure of Kibush Yechid according to these Rishonim. And Rabbi Meir now believes that Kibush Yechid Shmei Kibush, and Syria does have levels of Kedushat Haaretz, again, not full-fledged Kedushat Haaretz, because we still see that there are differentiations between Syria and Eretz Yisrael. Right now, Gemara continues to explain Rabbi Meir Shita and says, B'chutz Haaretz, when it comes to Chutz Haaretz, Sadeh Di'Beitarte, Sadeh that has two problems with it, Gazru Behu Rabbonin. Therefore, the Rabbonin would gozer in Chutz Haaretz that you cannot sell fields, you can only rent them out to the Akum. Batim that don't have two problems with them, Lokos Ruba Rabbanu. That's why you're allowed to both sell and rent them these properties in Chutz Haaretz. Now we move on to Rabbi Yossi Shita. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Be'eretz Yisrael, Maskirim Lahem Batim. In Eretz Yisrael, you can even rent to them houses. My time, huh? Sadoti Be'utarte Gazburuba Rabbanu. Sadot that have two problems to them, Mechira Zasur because of Lotechanim, and because of Mafkiya Masrot. Then they restricted schirut, renting, auto mechira. Batim, delepo, tarte, batim, they only have one problem associated with them. There, lo gazru barabonim. Mechira is problematic, lo techanim, it's an isur d'oraita. But schirut, that is only an isur d'rabanan, in a case where there weren't two problems with it, the rabanan were not gozer. Ubsuria mochrim, my taima, why does he treat Surya in a way that seems to indicate that it's only really a gzera auto Eretz Yisrael? Because Rabbi Yossi, when it comes to Syria, you can sell houses and you can rent out fields. So the answer is, He believes that the conquering of that area did not give it to Kedushat Haaretz. So that has two aspects to it. They were goes there unto Eretz Yisrael and said no mechira unto mechira be Eretz Yisrael. But in the late Pilutarte, it goes Rubo Rabona. Because, again, Schirut would be a Gzeira le Gzeira. Because there's no Kdusha to that area. It only goes around to Eretz Yisrael. Schirut is already Gzeira in Eretz Yisrael. To make it restricted in Syria would be a Gzeira le Gzeira. So Schirut is totally allowed in Syria. Mechira is only disallowed with regards to a field because of Atu Eretz Yisrael. That's a good question. According to Rabbi Meir, the problem of Syria is unique to Syria. Because according to him, it's all about Kedushat Haaretz. The issue is the fact that David went and was Koveshit, and it has a certain level of Kedushat Haaretz. That means it would be uniquely associated with Syria. On the other hand, for Rabbi Yossi, who says it has to do with the adjacency of Syria to Eretz Yisrael, you could envision, I'm not saying this would be the case, it might be that Syria is unique only because David did conquer it, and therefore they were goes there because Jews lived there, and was a part of the Jewish nation at different time periods. So it might still be uniquely to Syria. But you could envision then making Gzerot, or having these Gzerot applied to Mitzrayim, Ammon and Moab, Edom, which are all areas that are adjacent to Eretz Yisrael, as opposed to Bavel, which is more distant. The other thing you could argue is that that was the route of people who traveled to Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. You would travel through Syria. So that might give Syria a unique status, which is Jews are found there, because that is the bridge between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. So according to Rabbi Yossi, you would have to search for a reason to say Syria is different. But you could envision extending it. For Rabbi Meir, it's clear that it's uniquely associated with Syria. So now we're up to Ubechutzlaretz Mochrim. According to Rabbi Yossi in Chutzlaretz, it's a clear slate. You can do whatever you want. You can rent to them. You can sell to them. That's both Sadot, Batim. Everything is okay. My time. What is the reason behind it? The answer is very easy. Kevin de Merchak lo gazrina. Because it's farther away, they're not gozer. Which goes to your question. Sounds like if it's closer, there is reason to be gozer. Amir Adam Shmuel, halacha ki Rabbi Yossi. The halacha is like Rabbi Yossi over here. Generally, we have a principle when it comes to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. Halacha ki Rabbi Yossi. So you would argue then that maybe not everybody agrees to that principle that is brought in the Gemara and Erevin. Those are the principles of Rabbi Yochanan. Not everybody agrees to those principles. For that reason, you have to say halacha ki Rabbi Yossi over here, because just because it's Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Meir, doesn't mean automatically halacha ki Rabbi Yossi, according to those other Amoraim. We'll see in a second, there may be more reason, similar to what we saw back on Daf Zayin in the Gemara. I'm Rabbi Yossi. Ubivad shleyasena shkuna. There still is a corollary. You're allowed to sell them in Chutzlaretz, as long as you don't make it into a neighborhood of a vakum. Become a shkuna. What does it mean, make it into a neighborhood? Tana in shkuna pchuta mishlosha bnei adam. It's no less than three people, no less than three parties that are living in this area. So maybe this Jew will sell it to one akum, and then that akum will subdivide the property. Or if he sells them all three houses there, and he's living in them, and then he decides to sell off to them, then he brings in two more guvdei kochavim, in the end it will end up being a shkuna. Just because you sold it to one, doesn't mean it won't end up with three. So Amar Abaye, alifnei mefakdinan, alifnei delifnei lo mefakdinan. We are commanded to not allow for lifnei iver lo titen mekshol to take place in a direct involvement with one other party. But derivatives of that, we don't have any obligation. This again is something we saw back on Yudalid Amud Aleph, that with regards to selling objects to a goy, if that goy is not going to do something with it, you don't have to worry about it. If he goes ahead and then sells it to another goy where there could be a problem, that's not your problem anymore, because that's lifnei de lifnei. Over here, it would seem that that is not the right application of it. Because over here, what is the problem with selling it to a goy in the first place? And why should it be even involved in lifnei iver? So what you see here is Rashi and the Bali Tosafot both say the same thing, which is, Klomar, lekulei hai lo cheshinan. This is a means of expression, not a real halacha. The halacha is, lifnei iver lo titen mekshol, there is an obligation. Lifnei lifnei, there is no obligation. We already saw in the Bali Tosafot at least one possibility of a distinction that only applies by goyim. By a Jew, there may still be a problem with lifnei de lifnei. So over here, where you say, alifnei de lifnei lo mefakdinan, we have to see in a second, but it might involve Jews. If it involves Jews, why isn't there a problem of lifnei de lifnei? So what the Bali Tosafot and Rashi both say is, this is a means of expression where the Gemara says, lifnei iver is a reasonable problem to be worried about. Lifnei means it's too far away. It's too much of a derivative, and therefore we're not going to have you take into consideration the possibility of such a far-fetched probability or far-fetched case. It's beyond the scope of what we would expect from people to deal with. So they see it more as a holistic expression and not a halachic expression, which is that when you sell it to the one goy, that will make you take care of. He's going to subdivide the property and sell it to a whole bunch of people. That's just too far forward, too far away from what you have to worry about when you're selling the object. That is the view of Bali Tosafot and Rashi. The Bali Tosafot in the end say, Inami. They bring another reason why there is a problem over here, and that does open up a much bigger issue, which is that when it comes to a shkuna, Inami came into Easter shkuna lo yavah hezek l'Yisrael, korle mechshol lifnei iver. The reason we don't allow the Avdei Kochavim to gather together is because they cause a problem for the Jews. Which is that once they start gathering together, they're going to start killing the Jews or have damage to the Jews. So now it becomes a much more serious issue, which is, there is Lifnei Iver. If you bring in three goyim into the Shechuna, which now, according to this part about the Tosafot, the problem is clearly a problem of Shechunat Yisrael. You can't do this. You can't sell it to them where there's a Jewish neighborhood. You sell it to them, you're actually going to endanger the remaining Jews that are in the neighborhood. And that's Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mechshol. Now, that's not exactly Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mechshol, because Lifnei Iver usually involves the restriction that someone is going to violate. But here, the Ben Noach is going to violate murder? I'm not sure that's Lifnei Iver they're speaking about. It's speaking about Lifnei Iver, which is that you're going to cause a problem for the remaining Jews that are left behind. Even in that case, it's not real Lifnei Iver, because it's really a problem of Hezek Yisrael, which is you're going to cause damage. So again, there, I think you would still have to say that Lifnei is the case, not Lifnei, because it's too far removed. Because again, we say if it really is involved with Jews, by Jews there is a problem with Lifnei. And then how can you make such a distinction? They say, even according to this, where Tosafot is coming up with the real reason there is a Mechshol, it's still not as real as Lifnei Iver, because it's causing a Mechshol, it's not causing a Mechshol to that particular person who's been violating a Veira. The Mechshol is that you're going to cause Jews to be endangered in this place. And that is a problem of Mechshol, because you're now creating an enemy within. That's the way that Tosafot expresses it. The way the Bali Tosafot expressing it, it has to do with the fact that there's a Jewish neighborhood, and now you're causing a problem within the Jewish neighborhood. If it already exists, the problem, then maybe there's no problem with making it worse, because it's already there, the problem exists, and they already have to be chushesh for it. Once they have to be chushesh for it, then putting more people there is not going to make a difference. There is an alternate view in the Meiri that the problem here is Avodah Zarah. And that is that when there's only one goy living there, he doesn't bring in Avodah Zarah. When he's got a whole bunch of friends living with him, all of a sudden it becomes a shkuna, and they start bringing in Avodah Zarah. And that goes to the other problem that mentioned the Mishnah. You're not allowed to have Avodah Zarah be brought into these areas. And then it's real Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mechshol for the goy. Which is that if you facilitate his ability to bring in Avodah Zarah, then it's problematic. When you just sell him the house, he's not going to do that. You sell him a neighborhood, they're going to put up a house of Avodah Zarah between the three of them. Like anytime you have Jews move into a neighborhood, a whole bunch of Jews, the next thing you're going to have is a shul, you're going to have a somewhere where they're going to gather to daven. So the same thing there by Goyim, that's how the Meiri expresses it, that it's a problem of Avodah Zarah. And in that case, you could explain it as real Lifnei Iver. And there you have a goy who's involved in Lifnei Iver. You can make the distinction between Lifnei versus Lifnei de Lifnei. Right, now, the Gemara continues and says, Apamakom Shemul Askir. It's the last line of the Mishnah. Michlal, Deikam Duchte Tulo Mugre. From there, part of the Mishnah makes it clear that there are places you cannot rent, places that you can rent. That means Stamal to Rabbi Meir. The Stam Mishnah at the end here is according to Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir is the only one in the Mishnah who has places where you can't rent. According to Rabbi Yossi, you can rent houses in Eretz Yisrael. That means, yes, Eretz Yisrael, yes, Surya, yes, Bavel. So they can't have a statement in the Mishnah, even where they allow you to rent. He allows you to rent everywhere. So it's Stamak Rabbi Meir, Dib Rabbi Yossi, Mechol Duchta Mugre. According to Rabbi Yossi, you can rent anywhere. So this goes back to what I said before about Shmuel saying the Loch is Rabbi Yossi. If you remember, we had this earlier in the Gemara on Daf Zayin, which is that the Gemara says, Machloket, V'achar Kach Stam, if you have a Machloket and a Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, and then afterwards you have a Stam Mishnah, that's like one of the two opinions, Halacha K'Stam Mishnah. The Halacha is also like the Stam Mishnah, and that would be the case over here. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Meir, Halacha K'Rabbi Meir, because the Stam Mishnah now follows the place of Rabbi Meir. So now you have a problem, because Shmuel comes along and says, Halacha K'Rabbi Yossi. So what the Bali Tosafot said back on Daf Zayin is, the same principle that says, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Meir, Halacha K'Rabbi Yossi, also over there is the same opinion that says, Machloket V'achar Kach Stam, Halacha Chastam Mishnah. Not all Omaraim agree to that. So what the Baal Tosafot said back on Daf Zayin is Ein Ochanami. Neither of those principles are in application over here. So then, why does Shmuel have to come and tell us Halacha to Rabbi Yossi? Because when you have a Machloket Halacha Chastam, even according to those that say that doesn't define the fact that the Halacha is that way. Nevertheless, when you have a Stam Mishnah like someone, it gives them the power of Rabbim. Gives them the power of being in the majority. And that means now, if you have Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir, and then Rabbi Meir's opinion is given in a Stam Mishnah, that means that Rabbi Meir is given the power of Rabbim. Then, in that basis, you would have thought, Halacha to Rabbi Meir. Even if you don't hold the Machlok Vacharach Stam, Halacha to Stam, nevertheless, you would hold that Rabbi Meir now has power of Rabbim, and Halacha should be like him. That's what Shmuel comes to dispel and say, Halacha to Rabbi Yossi. The halacha is like Rabbi Yossi over here. So Shmuel doesn't hold of any of those halachot over there. Not Macholka Bechalka Stam. Not Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Meir, halacha Rabbi Yossi. But he also does realize that there's a Stam Mishnah. And the Stam Mishnah gives Rabbi Meir's position more power over here. He comes to dispel that and say still, despite that, halacha Rabbi Yossi in this case. So now, you have Rabbi Meir's position within the Mishnah, which is, you're not allowed to rent it out to individuals because of the problem of Avodah Zarah. The problem is that they're going to bring Avodah Zarah into the house, and it says, Lo tavi toiva el beitecha. So when it comes to Mechira, we can understand that there's no problem by Mechira because you're selling it to the Goy, and it's the Goy's house. He can do what he wants with the house once you've sold it to him. So that's why that it's not an issue. When it comes to Schirut, there you have a serious issue because it's still your house, and now he's bringing Avodah Zarah into your house. Now that might go back to whether Skirut is Kanya or Skirut is Lo Kanya, but it might be, the Gemara said, even if you say Skirut is Lo Kanya, that by Avodah Zarah it's a more stringent restriction, and any facilitation of Avodah Zarah in your house, in something that you own, is problematic. And that's even if you say Skirut Kanya, it may still be a problem. That's what the Gemara earlier on said. So now you have a restriction against Lo Tavi Toiva Beitecha. The Baal Tosafot asks just a very simple question. How do we rent to non-Jews today? He says it's prevalent in our communities that they are renting out houses to non-Jews. And he says, how do we deal with the fact today that we're renting out our houses to non-Jews? And now the Baal Tosafot have to try to justify this practice. She says, V'yesh l'papeh, kamash sumchim b'nei adam, l'mkor l'askir batim l'ovdei kochavim, af the Beit Dira. They're not just renting it out to them for storage, they're renting it out as places to live, as residences. How do you do this? One possibility is the Tosefta says you cannot rent it out for Beit Dira, but you can rent it out for Otsarot. You can rent it out for places that are used for storage, not for places that are used for residences. So now you could argue, and it seems to be from the Tosefta itself, that that's even if they bring in a Avodah Zarah to those locations, it's still not problematic if you rent it out for storage areas because that's only Arai, it's not Bikviyut. But when it's your house and a residence and they're going to bring it in there, that's problematic. Ulefi ze, be'eitsh of de kochavim shebenenu, enu machnisin batem of dat kochavim bikviyut. Based on the Tosefta that I said to you before, which seems to make a distinction between residence and storage areas, and that's even if the storage areas they bring in a Avodah Zarah, it's still okay because it's not Bikviyut. It doesn't happen on a permanent basis. So what he suggests is the same thing today. The goyim that we live amongst, they don't bring in their Avodah Zarah into their houses in a permanent way. Elok Shesha mate, Oshunem Te Lamut. They only bring in the Avodah Zarah when they passed away, or the guy is on his deathbed. Then they bring it in so that he could do whatever he has to do before he dies, and then that's it. Begamuta Sha'a Enu Movdim Otam. And even in that time, they're not really worshiping the Avodah Zarah. They just bring it in as a, whether it's for good luck or for the person to have some religious connection when they are passing away. So the first solution that Tosafot gives is that the people we live amongst today don't bring in Avodah Zarah in a permanent way into their house. And so therefore there's no problem because it's only a temporary thing, and that we saw from the Tosefta is mutar. What Tosafot doesn't do, which is interesting, he doesn't say the Akum that we live amongst aren't Ovdei Avodah Zarah. That could have been another answer, which they don't go down that path, even though in other areas of Halacha they do try to use that. Here they don't do that, which is interesting. Achein, Ein Misham Rayag Mura. He says, I'm not sure that that's the best proof or the best answer to the problem. Because you explain that the Tosefta difference between Otsarot and residence is because the Pasuk says, Lo Tivi Toiva El Bei Techa. Beitecha means your house, a place of residence. And it might be the Yisud Doraita is only on residences. If that's the case, then the reason by Otsarot we don't worry about it is because it's only really, if you would make it into a problem derabanan. Doraita, there's no problem of Avodah Zarah in the Otzarot, because that's not the restriction of the Torah. The Torah says Beitecha. If that's the case, you could have distinguished between houses, residences, and other areas. That would mean it would make no difference whether they put it in temporarily or permanently. Avodah Zarah is restricted when it goes into your residence. So it says, Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen Amid Virai LaHatir. He brings it from the Yerushalmi, which says, Ap Makom Shav Sru LaAskir Lo Lo Beit Dira Amru. Yushalmi seems to say it's dealing with minhag, whether the practice is or isn't to sell houses to them, and that will determine about renting to them. And why is it that the fact that you can rent to them or even sell to them based on minhag? It's not called your house in Chutz Laretz, it's only called your house in Eretz Yisrael. Very Tzioni statement here by Rabbi Chaim HaKohen. A Jew is only called a house when he lives in a house in Eretz Yisrael. If he's living in a house in Chutz Laretz, it's not your house. So that's an amazing statement by the Rabbi Chaim HaKohen. And Tosafot points it out. He said, why should a Jew be any worse than a Goy? A Goy in Chutz Laretz, it's called Beit Cha, or his Bayit. So if a Ovi Kochavim has Kinyan in Chutz Laretz to make it into his house, why shouldn't a Jew have the same ability to make it into his house? Would be patur from mezuzah. Well, wait a minute. So now, if you can't have a Beit Cha in Chutz Laretz, it also means you can't have mezuzah in Chutz Laretz. Now, that you can solve with the problem, which is ein hachanami. Remember, the Baal Tosafot suggested before that when it comes to schirah, then you don't have a chiyuv mezuzah at all, meaning that it's patur midoraita. But that, the Baal Tosafot would say, that's true by schirut. But that makes it sound like if you owned it, you'd have to put up a mezuzah immediately, and there's a chiyuv d'oraita. That means you can create a Beit Cha in Chutz Laretz. So the Baal Tosafot are not happy with this explanation of the Rav Chaim HaKohen, but they say, Mihil Nier Deri, Yerushalmi Evi Rabbeinu Chaim Raya Gemurahi. It says in the end that the Yerushalmi is the proof, but not because of the reason of the Rav Chaim HaKohen. El Atam Mefereish Rabbeinu Chanan. Rabbeinu Chanan explains to us the reason, which is, Mipnei Shekshamar HaTorah Lo Tevi Tovei El Beit Cha, you could have argued, and this is what we're arguing by mezuzah, which is means the only requirement of mezuzah is when you own the house and you live in the house. If we explain the same thing by avodah zarah, lo tavi tovail beitecha, that restriction is only when it's your house and you're living in the house. Beitcha means you have to be dar there. The restriction against bringing avodah zarah, you can read the pasuk simply. Don't bring avodah zarah into your house. That's when it's your house, when you're living in it. But that's not when you own the house and someone else is living in it. That's not called Beit Cha anymore. The same thing. That's what I said before. You need both aspects to be Beit Cha. You need ownership and you need dirah. About socher bayit, af Eretz Yisrael patur min mezuzah min haTorah. Here it talks about states' position again. That's why it was important to mention it before. It has implications now. So too, when it comes to avodah zarah. The same thing. Therefore, in Eretz Yisrael, if you owned it and you were living in it, be restricted. So therefore, they were gozer schirut in Eretz Yisrael. And also, again, they were only gozer by bate dira. They were not gozer by otzrot. Okay, even the schirut bate dira, you know, asur elami derabanan, af ba'aretz. Even in Eretz Yisrael, it's only asur elami derabanan. In Cain, b'chutz la'aretz, hekelu. That's why they were mekel in Chutz La'aretz. And that brings you the din now that there's a huge kula in Chutz La'aretz because it's a gzeirat chachamim. Now you have a lot of room to maneuver. Because when it's talking about a disur d'oraita, you don't have any room to maneuver. Talking about isur d'rabbanan, you can say that they're mekel in certain instances or in certain issues. And that's why you would be mekel to be maskir to Oveid Kochavim in Chutz La'aretz, even though it's Beit Cha, because you're the landlord. It's not Beit Cha d'oraita, which would be a bayit in which you live. And that's where the restriction is. And since it's in Chutz Laretz, they were not gozer, they were mekil with regards to this. And that's why they'll ask him that you can even do schirut in Chutz Laretz, even though you have this problem of lo tavi toivail beitecha. It doesn't have application in Chutz Laretz, because there's no gzerat chachamim, and beitcha is not triggered because you don't live in the house, even though you own it. Right now, the problem of lo yiskor beit merchatz, you're not allowed to rent out a beit merchatz. So Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, lo yiskor adam merchatzo lo veit kochavim, mipnei shenikra al shemo. Problem is that it's going to be assigned to you or your name is on it. But with Avim, they'll say, "Bo melacha b'Shabbatot v'yomim tovim." It's going to be running the bathhouse on Shabbat, Yom Tov. They're going to be heating up the water. They're going to do all this stuff, and people are going to think it's your bathhouse, and it's being heated up. About the kuti, my to sell it to a kuti, we can see many times through the Masechta, the kuti is someone who sits between the Jew and the Ovid Kochavim. He keeps the Torah shibichtav at least. He doesn't necessarily believe in the Chachamim and Torah shibbe'al peh. But nevertheless, he keeps Torah shibichtav. So he sits in the between a goy and a Jew. Shori, there you would say it's mutar. Because a kuti keeps Shabbat. Shabbat's written in the Torah. So he's not going to do things on Shabbat and Yom Tov. You don't have to worry about it. But what about a kuti? Emar avid bei melacha b'chol shomoleid. They don't hold the chol shomoleid because the isur melacha b'chol shomoleid is, whether it's derabanan or doraita, it's all out of a limud. That is not explicit in the Torah. And so kutim don't believe there's any restriction of doing work on chol shomoleid. So now what's going to happen? They're going to open up the bathhouse in chol shomoleid to the work on chol shomoleid. And people are going to say the Jews working on chol shomoleid. Why isn't that a problem? It says, the chol shomoleid, anu namei avdinan. Wait a minute. A melacha is not asur the gamrei in chol shomoleid. There's certain melachot that are allowed on chol shomoleid, which are for tzorech ha-moleid and for dabar avid. So you have het teirim, or certain things that are not even restriction for a Jew. And in this case, if it's tzorech ha-moleid, then you would be permitted to do this melacha. So what's the problem that the kuti is doing melacha? Even if they say, oh, you're doing that melacha on chol shomoleid, the answer is yes, you're allowed to do that melacha on chol shomoleid. Or you could come up with a scenario where it is something that is under the permitted rules of chol shomoleid, and so therefore people won't assume that you're doing it be isur. Aval l'sadeyu, lovid kochavim, mai. When it comes to your field, then you're renting it out to a non-Jew, sorry, there we say it's totally mutar. Mai daima, what's the reasoning over there? If you say to me that if your name is on the object, then you can't rent it out to someone else because people are going to think you're working when it's asur to work, how can you rent your field to the non-Jew? When you rent the field to the non-Jew, he's working the field, and people are going to say, your field's being worked on Shabbat. Why isn't that a problem? Arisa arisutei ko'ovid. The sharecropper is working for his own benefit. Mer chatznami, why don't you say the same thing with the bathhouse? Arisa arisutei ko'ovid. You'll say too, when he's renting it out, the guy's working for himself. Arisa de mer chatz lo avde inche. People don't make sharecroppers out of a Beit HaMerchatz. So now, over here, the Rabbeinu Tam comes up with a huge chiddush, which would have major implications halachically. What the Rabbeinu Tam says over here is that the Gemara makes it clear here that the problems in Schirut are that it's going to be under your name. And Arisa Arisutei Kovid. When it comes to a field, we do have that principle that the Aris is working for himself. If he's working for himself, he's allowed to do it on Shabbat. When it comes to a Beit Merchatz, he's not working for himself, and therefore, for whatever reason, the Gemara believes that Arisa doesn't work. What the Rebbeinu Tam points out is that's only true when he is working for you as a schir yom, or he's working for you in a direct manner. If the non-Jew is working for you in a manner where it's in his vested interest to get it done, then you are not responsible for that. For instance, one is not allowed to have workers working in their house or working on their house. For instance, you're building a house. You cannot have workers come on Shabbat and build the house on Shabbat because people are going to say, your workers are here on Shabbat working for you. The Rebbeinu Tam says that's only true if they're schirei yom, if they're day hires, or they're people who are working directly for you. If they're working mekablanut, if they're working as a contractor, then the payment to the contractor is the following. You build the house and I pay you. So the contractor has to make a decision about how fast or when he builds the house and how he builds the house. When he works on Shabbat, he's not working for you. He's working because he wants the house done in a certain period of time. He says, "V'kal v'chomer u'dahashta arisu tzedeh shechala k'Yisrael mashbiach melacha ashari." In the case of an arisa, where the guy is a sharecropper and we say he's doing it for his own benefit, even though the Jew benefits from that. Because an arisa only gets a percentage of the crop. The remaining percentage belongs to the Jew. And he still is allowed to do it on Shabbat. He says, "Kablanut shein bo shevach l'Yisrael klal." Here, the Jew gets no benefit whether the contract works faster or slower than koshkein denecha. Dema de kablana kablute kabli. That a contractor works for himself, he's only doing it for his own benefit, and you don't have any problem with him working on your house on Shabbat. The Rebbeinu Tam makes a statement, which I'm not sure is necessarily true today. Maybe in their day it was true. But he says, there's an underlying assumption that you don't care how fast he finishes the house. Now, I don't think that's necessarily true today because everybody's late when it comes to contractors. Therefore, people do want them to finish on time or reach a certain deadline. Back there, he says, oh, you don't care if he finishes faster or slower. I'm not sure that's true today, but assuming that that condition is correct, what he's saying is the contractor's finishing faster or slower is simply his own incentive to get paid. In the end, he has to finish the house. How he finishes the house or how fast he finishes the house, that's up to him. Now, that's true, and the Rabbeinu Tam proves that from many things that we deal with, malachot on Shabbat. When it comes to malach on Shabbat, we always say that if the goy is doing it for his own vested interest, then you do not have to worry about the goy doing malach on Shabbat. So, for instance, if you have a hired person that comes to your house and is washing dishes for you on Shabbat, you can wash your dishes on Shabbat, just like you can, they can wash it for you, but they do it with hot water. Well, why are they doing it with hot water? Is that because they have to wash the dishes? You wash the dishes with cold water, and you do it that way anyway. They wash it with hot water because it's easier for them to wash it with hot water. So they're doing something for their own benefit. You're not responsible for that. If they can do it in a mutar way, and they choose to do it in an easier way for themselves, then you don't have to worry about them doing malach on Shabbat. You have a hired non-Jewish worker that comes to your house on Shabbat. That worker has to return to their house. They take a car home. They take a bus home. Do you have to worry about that? Well, it's a question. Could they reach their house by walking? If the answer is yes, then if they choose to take a car or a bus, that's because they want to get there faster. That's their own benefit. Could they do it in a way that would be mutar on Shabbat? The answer is yes. They just choose for their own benefit to do it in a manner that's easier for them. If they cannot reach their house without doing malacha, then you would have a problem because then you are forcing them into doing malacha on Shabbat for your benefit. So what the Rabbeinu Tam says is the same thing by Kabbalanut. He's doing the work on Shabbat because that's what he wants. He wants to do the work on Shabbat because he wants to finish faster, to get paid faster. He's not doing the work on Shabbat for your benefit. You drop off stuff at the dry cleaners 5 minutes before Shabbat, you have a problem. Because if you drop it off 5 minutes before Shabbat and pick it up 5 minutes after Shabbat, or to the mechanic, you drop your car off, you're causing him to do it on Shabbat. There's no question he has to do it on Shabbat. You drop the car off Friday morning, you pick it up on Sunday morning. He has a choice to do it on Shabbat or not. That's up to him. He chose to do it on Shabbat, that's for his own benefit. That is mutar. If you give them the opportunity to do it in a way that is mutar and asur, and they choose to do asur, that's their own benefit. Beit Hamikdash applies that to contracting. That would be a huge head there, because anybody's built a house in the Chutz La'aretz, if the Kabban has to sit out every time there's a Shabbat, that seriously slows down the work, and it causes their ups and downs because of that. So here, the Beit Hamikdash has a head there to do it. The Ri over here argues against their Beit Hamikdash, because their Beit Hamikdash has to deal with one Gemara that says, and this is an important halacha in Shabbat as well, there's a restriction against in the Tchum, not outside the Tchum, which is a din in Shabbat, that is if the malacha is being done on your behalf outside of the Tchum where nobody can know about it, nobody gets there, then it is mutar. So for instance, if you're building a house or building a building where nobody knows it's your building and no Jews go there anytime on Shabbat, it would be mutar for the workers to keep working on Shabbat, as opposed to a place which is close by or within the Tchum or an area where Jews do get access to. Rabbeinu Tam explains that Gemara is dealing with an Avel. It says it has nothing to do with Shabbat, it has to do with an Avel. An Avel is also restricted in having work done. And he says that whole Gemara is about an Avel, not about Shabbat. The Ri argues on him and says, it's all a din in Shabbat. And the Ri brings his proof from the Yerushalmi, where the Yerushalmi says, by Kablanut, there is a restriction, Mechubar. And based on that, he thinks that the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, with regards to matters of Kablanut. So based on that compendium of Halachot, the Ri wants to argue on the Rabbeinu Tam's position over here, and believe that Kablanut is Asur, and that's limited to items that are Mechubar, like a house, things that are Talush. If the goy takes it to his own house and works in his own house, if it's bekablanut, then you don't have a problem anymore because he's doing it for his own benefit, his own house. There's no pashat anymore. Nobody knows it belongs to the Jew. In that case, it would be mutar. In addition, he says that when it comes to building of houses and these items, generally they're not done, as the Gemara says here, barisut. And it's also questionable whether they're always done by kablanut. And since it's not obvious that they're always using a kablan, that there is a times when people use chireyom, that's where you can have a problem of chashad, and that's the restriction against using kablanut. Even if the goy is doing it for his own benefit, you still have the problem of chashad, that people are going to see these workers and think they're chireyom, and that's why there's the restrictions. But that's also why there are the dispensations when it's outside the tchum. Because over there, nobody's going to see it, and then there's no problem of chashad. If you can get rid of the problem of chashad, and you're using a kablan, by which the kablan is now working for himself, then it's not problematic. The Rabbeinu Tam's position is based on this arisutei ariso abid, that the goy is working for himself, so by kablan he's also working for himself. The Ri says, you didn't read the Gemara right over here. Why is the aris mutar over here? It's because the aris gets paid out of the produce of the field. You don't pay him with cash. So he's working to get his payment, which is the growth of the field itself. And that's what it means, Arisutei Avid. It's not that he is doing his own work, but he paid out of whatever is in the field. He becomes a shutaf in the property, and since he's a shutaf, he's taking his share of the shutafut. And that's why it's mutar by the field, as opposed to the merchatz, where he gets paid in cash. Where he might be a shutaf if you call him that, but in the end, he's getting paid cash. He's not taking his payment out of the production of the field itself. And that is the distinction that he makes. And because of that, he says the kablan is just as problematic. Because the kablan gets paid in cash, he doesn't get paid out of the item that he's working on. And for that reason, he believes that kablanut is asur. And again, the Baal Tosfot end over here, when Rabbeinu Tam built his own house, even though he believed halachically was mutar, he deferred to the other abonim, and he did not allow the workers to come and work on Shabbat for him. All right, we're going to stop here. 3 lines from the bottom of Chof Aleph Amud Bet.